it's not going to be Blue Oyster Cult.
No, it's not going to be Blue Oyster Cult. It's going to be me flying. You guys saw, I'm sure you stalked Facebook enough to see I was flying.
I haven't stalked Facebook in a few days.
Oh, well, then you missed it. I went flying on Friday. And it's one of those opportunities. Would you not do that? Children. Jesus, I'm going to stick you in the corner. Oh, you motherfuckers.
Just because it's so, like, it's your... It, okay, Tyler's got his flying story where he's running around like in the Road Warrior 3.
Yeah, it was very much Road Warrior 3.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, but it was like, it was literally Thursday evening, and my brother-in-law sends me a text, hey, would tomorrow be a good day to go flying? Because I've been trying to find a time to do so. And I got to thinking, well, let me think. I'm self-employed, and I've pretty much done most of my work for the week. Everything I was going to do on Friday, I could put, fuck yeah, let's go flying. So drive, it is a 3.5 hour round trip to the airport and back, just so I could fly around pointlessly for an hour.
Easy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, it's up out of Newburgh, so it's.
Oh, okay.
He doesn't fly out of PIR. Are you kidding me? And that little thing, you'd die.
That'd be cool.
It would be insane.
It's like your
PIR.
PDX. Yeah, thank you.
I was going to say, Portland International Raceway. What is he going to do?
Like a car that tows it and launches it off. That's how it works. Yeah. No, that'd be cool. Like, you're in an ultralight right behind a 747.
That'd be terrifying.
It'd be like Jaws or something.
It would be so scary. But, so it's not technically an ultralight. It's called a sport light. It's built by an Australian company. He's got the fancy one now that's built to literally land in the outback.
It's an ultralight.
No, it's a sport light. It is a kite with a motor on it. This one's 4-stroke, though.
That making it not an ultralight?
No.
What makes it not an ultralight?
The frame. The frame and the fuselage. Because there is some semblance of fuselage.
Anybody,
but I mean, like, you're sitting in chairs that are essentially the size of the ones we're sitting in.
Anybody looking at this thing,
probably wouldn't call it a plane.
Anybody looking at this, the Wright Brothers plane is like a Learjet compared to this.
Well, it's exactly like, have you ever seen that movie Fly Away Home? It's exactly what that young lady flew. It's exactly that kind of plane.
Yeah, but turns it down.
It's kind of, I mean, like, you're in the air, and this thing, like, last one's top speed was 65, and 65 feels pretty fast when you're in the sky with nothing around you.
Yeah, I'm kind of surprised. Like,
this thing, cruise speed is 75. Cruise speed is 75.
You're doing 75?
In a fiberglass thing with chairs, like I said, about as wide and big as this.
That's crazy.
Smaller even. And he's like, and he loves going into the fields, and I love going into the fields too. I'm all good with all the exciting shit. This new one banks at 60 degrees. So it's 60
and
degrees.
There's
you
no
look
cabin.
Down at the ground. There's nothing between you and the ground.
Well, a piece of a harness.
I've got one shoulder strap and a seatbelt.
Well, it's not like a 5-point harness?
No, there's two shoulder straps.
So the same thing keeping you buttoned into a 73 Chevy Nova is the same thing holding you up?
Exactly. Well, there's two shoulder straps total. So if there's two people in the plane, the pilot gets one and the passenger gets one and you both have a lap belt. And that's all that's keeping you in this fucking plane.
That's pretty yang.
It's so, God, it's so fucking exciting. And we head into this field and he starts counting. 75, 80. 85, and I like my heart rate is bumping up, and I'm getting and the wind, and it's just, and we got the headsets. You know, you're all fishes with the helmet and the little headset and the earphones thing, and you can hear the tower.
Wait, is it? I can't remember if I saw your little helmet deal, but is it a full face helmet or is
there's
it
a drop shield?
Okay, yeah. so it's a full face sort of thing.
Yeah, you could not take the wind.
Yeah, it
gets really fucking cold.
Yeah,
really cold.
Oh yeah,
yeah, like. You think riding a motorcycle is cold? Nuh-uh. Do it in the air. It's really cold up there. And 95, we got to almost 100 miles an hour going down toward this field. Literally nothing between you and the ground. It was so exhilarating. I forget how much fun it is. We flew over the Abbey up at Mount Angel and got to chuckling about, you know, this is an angle or a view that even the monks don't get to see. To which the obvious response is, well, except maybe when they die. Because then the dog has friends next door now.
Yeah.
He just likes to tell everybody, hey, it's podcasting weekend, don't bark.
How much fuel do those things carry?
This one has a 10-gallon tank, and it burns about 2.5 gallons an hour.
That's amazing.
So he can fly to the ocean, land, and then fly home on one tank of gas.
That's amazing.
I'm sitting on the tank of gas. Like, the back passenger is sitting on the tank of the gas. Yeah,
that's amazing. I didn't know that I would have thought that they'd use gas quite a bit more than that.
No. Super efficient. Super efficient.
I mean, because, like, I've never flown in one of these things, but, you know.
I know a guy.
I've ridden a motorcycle, and basically at about 75 miles an hour, you start to feel the skin on your face ripple.
Mm-hmm.
And then at about 85 miles an hour, you look like that guy at the beginning of the Nine Inch Nails Closer video. if you open your mouth, you can't really close it again. Your cheeks are just flapping, and you look sort of like a hound dog with his face out the truck window. You look like that, and you will look like that until you slow down.
Yeah.
You know, and it's just like, and
it's incredible.
You're scraping the bugs off your teeth.
Yeah.
I would recommend if you know anybody that has them, go do it.
Yeah, so, if you're sitting there with the full face shield, you don't get it.
No bugs on the face, nothing.
So when you're done, do you have a lot of bugs on the face shield?
Not really, especially.
So
I mean,
there's less bugs up there.
We're flying at 900 feet above sea level, so it's roughly 700 above where we are, above the ground where we are. Thank you, flat earthers. And so there's no bugs up there. Like, we flew under an airplane.
I mean, I don't know. Seems like there might be some, like, different bugs or something.
Yeah, those are called birds.
Bugs. Those are called aliens.
Those are called birds. Yeah. those are big bugs.
Yeah.
Last time I went flying, some eagles went flying with us for a little while.
That's something you find out, like, you know, because I just use, like, a little half helmet with no face shield, no nothing. And
you want to live dangerous.
The thing you find out riding a motorcycle is the first thing you find out is there's way more bugs out there than you thought before you started riding a motorcycle.
And exoskeleton is something you learn about.
Yeah. And then the second thing you find out is bugs are substantially bigger at night. Much bigger bugs impacting your face.
Interesting.
Yeah. Juicier, too. A sort of wee, wet streak.
So anytime you need a snack, you just open your mouth. You know, you get the instant protein rush for those late night
trips. A whale.
Yeah. Yeah. I remember, like, my ex-wife was, like, you know, she was sort of into the sexy of the motorcycle. And then after a few months, like, of me coming in and stuff like that, after
it wore off.
Riding, she was just like, you know, this is an aspect of it I hadn't really thought about.
If this is a person that could spend a week in the forest with me and not shower.
Yeah, distinctly unsexy, the bug impact thing. So I'm kind of surprised at that. I thought there would be, like, different bugs up there.
No bugs.
That's cool. No bugs. That's a lot better.
He also has a windscreen on this one, which does help, even when during takeoff and such. But it's really thin plexiglass, and it's just, like, bolted to a piece of metal.
Seems a little bit like a for show sort of thing.
Yeah, it does help a little bit over the last one. So.
Yeah. Wow, that's cool.
I recommend you should do it.
That's cool. So you got, like, a radio headset on when you're doing this.
And I can hear the tower, but I can't talk to the tower. But he can talk to the tower.
But you can talk back and forth in this.
So
the wind noise is not that great.
Because it's noise canceling. Like, if you take the headphones off,
yeah.
The propeller alone.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, I'm sitting on the gas tank, and there's a propeller right behind me.
Right,
like a four-stroke motor distance from my back.
Yeah, because if you're on a motorcycle, you got two people on a motorcycle, and you try and talk.
Impossible.
There's nothing.
That's why I never understand those jackals who drive past my house with a radio.
I don't get that either. I don't know what that's all about. I don't know.
It's always classic rock.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
It's always classic rock.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, you come through with Steppenwolf.
A lot of Bob Seger.
There's your Blue Oyster Cult right there.
Red fairing Honda, and
Yeah, the bigger the fairing, the more Bob Seger.
Yep.
Yeah.
It's a thing.
Not that I really, like, hate Bob Seger.
I enjoy him, but he has a place.
I mean, I'm okay with Bob Seger. I'll never own one of his records. I'm fine hearing it at other people's houses. I'm fine hearing it from other people's houses. I'll hear it there, but, like, yeah, I'm not gonna. But the thing of it is like, if I'm sitting there and, like, you know, mid-July is about when it starts to really crank up, and I hear the Eagles.
Uh-huh.
That's when
when I start loading guns.
I start zeroing my scope. I'm just like, no.
I can hit that radio from here.
I
don't want to hurt no people. I just, no more Eagles, please.
I don't need to hear Take It Easy. I don't. you know, if you listen to the Eagles, they're a perfectly fine band, but you ain't a rebel.
That's the problem. They're just perfectly fine. Yeah. They're nothing else.
Yeah. Just, do you have, oh, you have it.
If I do, I got it for free.
Good on you.
If I do, I got it for free. Good. I definitely have some fun. So anyhow, ladies and gentlemen, everyone else listening, we are Room and Heroes, a weekly free.
Turn the pages of my most hated boxes. I really, I can't take that song. But he's got a lot of, you know, Night Moves. Love that song. Great, great song.
Run of the Wind. Totally good song.
Yeah. Yeah. But Turn the Page. Fucking dirge. I can't take it. Sorry if you like Turn the Page. I just don't. But Bob Seger fans love that song.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like Hotel California.
So anyhow.
It's like one of those. Except at least it doesn't have a number rhyme in it. Like bring me some wine. We haven't had that spirit here since 1969. And it's just like, wow, phone it in. Phone in those lyrics there. Mm-hmm. That's what you get when a drummer's
That's what you
singer.
Get when you're too sober. Jesus. Anyway, we are a weekly free and self-produced podcast where the three of us irreverently discuss a topic of societal renown. I, Tyler, study like a guy who may like camping. John.
I want a Vegemite sandwich.
And Rupert.
Come take it. Come and take it.
You saw the shirt, right? Yeah.
Come and take it.
Please subscribe and leave good ratings and reviews on whatever podcast feed you get us through. It is free for you, and it helps us. Just exposure, and there is algorithms. To interact with us, we are Room and Heroes Pod at Gmail, as easily found on Facebook and Twitter, where you get weekly hints. I expected people to guess on this one more than they, or the one that was released today, released Samuel L. today.
Oh.
And I expected more guesses, but, you know, Brandon and family are right in there strong trying. So go, guys. Anyhow, there are weekly hints and shit. Say hi if you drop by. If you'd like to help us with the cost of the show, you can subscribe at patreon.com/ruinedheroes and get extra content for just $1 a month. There are links in the show notes as well as on our website.
Or you can wear the Jaeger. Take your pick.
There are links to the Patreon and the website in the show notes, and there are links to the Patreon on the website, which is ruinedheroes.com, where you can also find older episodes. Thank you to those of you who do give. We really appreciate it.
P-A-T-R-E-O-N. E-O-N.
P-A-T-R-E-O-N.
It is kind of a little bit of a jingle word, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
They could pay me for that.
Yeah.
Patreon just went up. How about a intro? For what it's worth, I don't expect you to get this one. Not because it's unknown to you, but because of where you live.
Now.
Here's a hint. This one's for our Australian listeners.
Crikey.
That was the theme of the three topics I sent John this week, where they were all three Australians.
Oh, crikey.
So.
You'll appreciate the subject matter.
You will. Well, maybe.
Really?
Maybe.
Is it like weird, dangerous animals? That'd be kind of cool.
No, but it is something we talk about.
Yes, it is a weird, dangerous animal. The fuck is wrong with you? Yes? So the answer is yes.
Okay, so, you know, I'm leaning more towards Mel Gibson. And I will kill you if it's Men at Work. I really will. That's like, that was Australia's low point, you know?
Well, Kylie Minogue then.
Well, Kylie does good work.
Yeah.
Her sister apparently is even better, but I'm not across it. Anyway, this was said by a guy. We're going to make fun of his name right now so we don't later. Named Paul Onions. Because that's his real given name.
Wow.
Like there's a whole family of onions, apparently.
Walla Wallas. Yellows, reds.
So, I just thought, this is it. Run or die. So I undid my seatbelt and jumped straight out of the vehicle and ran.
And this was said by Paul Onions.
That was said by Paul Onions.
About what?
So Onions got
about
the runs.
About the topic?
Yeah. Well, about... It's a hint. Yes, about a scary situation he clearly decided he was needed to run or die from.
Okay. Are we talking about Rue Bars?
No. Rue Bars?
You don't
fuck a rhubarb.
You don't know what a rhubarb is?
It's stuff you put with strawberry and make a pie out of.
No. Like, you know what a cattle
catcher...
It's
stuff you put in semen.
You know what a cattle catcher is?
Yes.
On a train, it's that wedge-shaped thing?
Yes.
To, like, knock the cow off the tracks?
Yes.
Like, a rhubarb, I've heard, I don't know if this is really true, but like I've heard that if you're in the wilds of Australia, you have a I-beam bumper, and then in the middle of that bumper, you have a curved piece that comes up and over the windshield so that when you hit the roof, that curved piece like deflects it from not going into your windshield.
I would believe that.
And that's called a roof.
I would believe that. Our Australian listeners can please pipe up and confirm or deny.
Well, you have some Australian listeners.
We do. That's part of the reason I wanted to do an all-Australian
thing. But like, I don't know if this is true. I feel like I've seen pictures of cars with a roof bar, but I don't really know. I think this might be only common in very wild,
super outbacky,
outbacky type.
You never know what kind of
place
modification
where you fly that plane I was riding in. It was literally made in Australia,
right? Like
that.
In other words, if your car has a roof bar, you're not driving around Olivia and
you're not going down and getting biscuits at the corner or whatever.
Yeah.
I mean, just the fact that 80% of the wildlife there wants you dead. Okay. You never know what kind of modification is on that vehicle.
You know that's an exaggeration, and they tell it to everybody just to keep the rest of us fuckers out, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Cool. So,
but I'm okay with staying out because I don't like the fact that...
So this next one was said by a guy named Boris, whose last name I can't say because he's a brother of the topic. He was going to kill somebody from the age of 10. It was built into him. I knew he was on a one-way trip. I knew that it was just a matter of how long.
Nick Johnson.
No. The person is Australian. Is Nick Johnson Australian?
Well, you said he shared his last name. Nick Yeltsin? Those are the only Borises I can think of.
Okay, fair.
Other than...
And Natasha?
I don't think the Boris there...
His name is And Natasha.
Oh, Joe Badenoff.
This one was said by prosecuting attorney Mark Tedeschi. So you asked the jury to accept that someone broke into your locked house, despite the burglar alarm, planted a Ruger rifle bolt in the ceiling of your garage, dropped the weapons receiver in one of your boots in the hall cupboard, making sure both gun parts were painted in the same camouflage colors you use on your firearms, and then left a single fired cartridge linked to the murder of Mrs. Caroline Clark in a plastic bag on the bed in a spare room. To which he replied, they must have.
Colonel Mustard.
Like I said, I didn't expect you to get this one. The guy we're doing is named Ivan Milat. And our Australian listeners will know who it is. Our murder mystery or murder people will
never
know who it is.
Never. So this is a famed Australian mass murderer.
Yeah, they made a movie out of him. Yep. Wolf Creek.
Wolf Creek is the name of the movie.
Yep. Never heard of it.
It's one of Australia's better known movies, which unfortunately they do make some great films. They just don't come across the pond as easily. Sources, the IvanMilatFiles.com, Murderpedia, which of course, sunsigns.org, allthatisinteresting.com. I also watch Catching Milat on Netflix. It's kind of fun, but it's very Hollywoodized history of it. So, born Ivan.
That little explanation there, it sounds like a very pro 2A person in the U.S. getting busted by the ATF. Kind of like that. Like, that's kind of cool.
So, born Ivan Robert Marco Milat, December 27th, 1944, in Guildford, Australia, to parents S-T-J-E-P-A-N. Stefan, I think, is how it was said. Or Stephen, or I don't. It's Croatian. Anyway, Stefan Milat from Croatia and Margaret Elizabeth Milat, formerly Piddleston, which is a really hard last name.
Wow.
Yeah, that's a rough. I would gladly change my last name to Milat even now.
I don't know that. Man, some chick named Piddleston. That's like making who you want to pee during a blowjob right here.
Right. Well, and her name is Margaret, so maybe it's Maggie Piddleston.
Whoa. Yeah. I would have to pee.
She was an Australian. He was the fifth of 14 kids to the family.
Jesus. The first to live past two.
Yeah.
Only two of them died, apparently.
Wow.
Before reaching adulthood.
Wow. That's some pre-planning going on.
It was 1944.
He probably tried to kill these two in the fucking womb.
Well, yeah. Stuff. His family called him Mac. Can't quite figure that out. But he was a pretty smart kid, and
Mac the Knife.
One of his teachers dubbed him
the foreshadowing.
He was a pretty smart kid, and one of his teachers dubbed him the professor in classes. But that did not change what he was learning at home. Dad, as so many are, was really kind of a shit person. Stories tell of him holding Ivan down with his boot in his back while beating him with a 2x4 for minor infractions.
Well, that kind of stuff happens.
How many fucking stories have we had here where the serial killer didn't have a fucked up childhood?
Yeah, none.
Okay. Let's just get that out of the way.
Yeah, there's fucked up childhood. That's one of the precursors to serial killer is you have a fucked up childhood. I also learned that apparently in Australia they call them a 4x2, which I don't know why, you guys, but just because it's upside down or what?
Well, it's, yeah, something happens.
Yeah, yeah. It goes the other way.
Yeah, it's got to be.
So.
Sounds about right. I don't know. I mean, it could be the whole rebel thing, you know, fighting the system.
They are kind of like, fuck everybody else, yeah.
Yeah, pretty much.
They're doing a good job. So, growing up in Moorbank, a suburb of Sydney, all the kids attended Catholic school. But after school, they would cause trouble. They
Sign two of a serial killer.
Yeah.
Fucked up childhood and Catholic school.
Heavy religious upbringing comes in a lot.
Man, I really miss my
head one. Trauma is another one that's very common.
Yeah, we're just knocking everything off the psychopath test here.
Yeah, well, I didn't read any bedwetting or head trauma, which are the other two signs.
They got beat with a 2x4. There had to be some.
He may have been being beat with a 2x4 for bedwetting. Who knows? Sounds like Dad was a real choice guy.
I could have been somebody.
You could have been a contender.
I could have. Just born on the wrong continent. Yeah.
So, yeah. After school, they'd get in trouble. They were very well-versed in the use of knives and guns at an early age and were well-known around town as troublemakers. And standard delinquent, you know, those Malat kids, all fucking 95 of them. In standard delinquent ways, he was quickly getting involved in actual crime. One of his first was stealing milk money from neighborhood porches. So back in the day when you'd
put money out for them, rent.
Yes.
Isn't it? That is
now he's low, like 13. Low but rent. Still.
Wow.
Like, even a 13-year-old could come up with something.
Oh, God, come on.
Yeah, not real creative.
It's like my crime friends, by the time they were 13, they were, like, stealing cars.
Well, yeah, and I'm going to throw this out there. I'm just going to say, I don't think the guy was very smart at all. I don't feel like I'm insulting anybody by saying that. By the time we were done with the story, I think you'll agree with the guy's fucking idiot. But anyhow, yeah, so one of his first schemes was stealing milk money from neighborhood porches. After dropping out of school at age 14, he quickly escalated to burglary, and by 1962, he faced his first court case, where he was accused of stealing in a dwelling. So I guess that's burglary, right? I don't know.
Well, most people, most locales actually will rate thieving from a residence higher than thieving from a business.
That's
in the burglary sense.
Fair.
For instance,
different insurance situation.
For instance, in Oregon, you are allowed to shoot somebody for attempted burglary
if they're in your home.
No, they do not have to be in your home. They can be attempting burglary, and you are allowed to shoot them so long as it's a residence. If it's a business, no, you cannot shoot them.
So why do the people at the bank have guns?
That's bank robbery. That's federal crime. But, yeah, no, if you're...
If somebody takes a baseball bat and starts breaking in one of your windows to come in, you can shoot them where they stand.
I thought they had to be in my doorstep.
Nope. That's in...
We don't have castle doctrine. Like, I can't be threatened at the edge of my...
Really Oregon has...
We've come very close.
Oregon has, we got like, stand your ground.
De facto castle
we have, doctrine. We have stand your ground.
So...
If it's in defense of person or property, we have stand your ground. We do not. There's nothing that says.
But it has to be residential.
Yeah,
you cannot shoot somebody
at the Burger King.
Yeah, no.
I mean, there was a guy just up in Corvallis.
Sorry, Hungry Jack's is an Australian.
There was a guy just up in Corvallis who, you know, about 20 years ago, he looks out in his driveway and sees a guy trying to break into his truck, shoots him, gets off because attempted burglary of a residence, car counted.
Yeah, you try to do that, you know, as you're at Safeway with your truck, and then somebody's breaking into your truck at Safeway, that's not going to work.
No, wait till you get home.
Yeah, exactly.
Let them get into the back and shoot them when you get home.
If they're inside, if they're actually inside your truck, you might be able to shoot them.
Yeah, then maybe.
Yeah.
Then maybe.
But we're at a fine line here.
Yeah.
In interesting.
We're just looking for reasons to shoot a motherfucker.
Kind of, yeah. Right now, I think we are. So, anyhow, so he did get caught for the stealing in a dwelling. He got off on these charges. That didn't last very long because shortly before turning 18, he ended up in Mount Penang Juvenile Institution for a few months.
Mount Penang?
Yeah. A lot of these are indigenous words, and if I mispronounce them, I don't mean to be insulting. It's just I'm reading them phonetically. But yeah, Mount Penang. P-E-N-A-N-G, Penang. How else would you say that?
I don't know, but I think...
And they're actually... You know how much I bitch about phonetically spelling things? The indigenous Australian words are pretty phonetically spelled.
Actually, pretty much
they most... Really
you get what you pay for.
Most languages outside of English are phonetically spelled.
They still fuck me up. I can somehow get through Australia.
I just appreciate, like, the Australians naming things off of indigenous languages. That's cool. But it's especially cool they're naming them off of indigenous languages to North Korea. So... that's even neater. You're even...
I don't think they were trying to be that inclusive.
Mount Penang?
Mount Penang.
That sounds like Kim Jong-il hangs out there.
It does. You know? It does. And from what I heard about the juvenile institutional reading about this, it sounds like he might have. But yeah, he's
at least set up the fucking program.
Yeah. So Malat's in Mount Penang Juvenile Institution for a few months. After his release, he's almost immediately escalated to car theft. So he's really moving up. He's old enough to drive. Somehow, he was also starting work with the Department of Main Roads, which sounds like, you know,
the highway department.
Exactly. Yeah, it sounds like exactly what it is. And that would take him all over the country of New South Wales. During this time, he took up...
NSW,
Yep. During this time, he took up drinking and smoking weed, having been a sober guy until then because of his Catholic roots. So also not a really great sign. When you're almost 20 and you just start hitting it hard, that can get rocky.
Yeah, Tyler, how'd that go?
I was a drinker long before. It was my 20s when I started doing
that. Yeah, but we didn't turn pro until we got legal.
True. I was pretty good.
By late 20s, we...
I deserved a sponsorship.
Yeah.
Yeah. And we found a way. It's called Patreon.com. So, somewhere in here, he supposedly confessed to his older brother that he had shot a taxi driver during a robbery. Someone else was convicted of this crime, so we'll never know, but it is one of those Innocence Projects kind of things over there. Most people said he had a very unhealthy addiction to firearms. And
you think?
Yeah, it sounds like he was really, like, beyond gun nut. And spent most of his free time in the outback riding motorcycles, four-wheeling, and hunting, so, you know, and counting his teeth, I would imagine. Actually, he did have a full head of teeth, but... It sounds like that kind of guy. Not all that out of the norm. He was clearly more into it than most of those who knew him. They figured he was just kind of a scary guy who liked rugged outdoorsman kind of shit. So in 1969, one of Ivan's sisters was killed in a car crash while one of his brothers was driving. Ivan was the first family member on the scene and is said to have taken it really pretty hard, like may have snapped him. Some think this is one of those switches that clicked in his head. Most of the crimes would happen between Christmas and Easter, the time of this accident. And psychologically, kind of math out. It makes sense.
Easter, yeah, the great day.
Well, yeah.
Where God gets killed and comes back as a bunny that lays chocolate eggs.
Yeah, it was fucked up that I was doing another Easter one on Easter without knowing it. But anyhow, like the time we did Jesus on Easter. You're going to have to go to the website for that one. That's an old one, but... That was funny when we realized, oh, fuck, it's Easter. We're doing Jesus. So, anyhow, all was well enough until Easter weekend, 1971, when two teenage females accepted a ride from Malat. He quickly produced knives and rope and took the girls to a remote field where he tied them up and tortured them until he proclaimed that if neither one of them would have sex with him, he was going to kill them. He then raped them both. He was caught and tried for these crimes in 1974. The prosecution was so fucking sloppy that Malat got off with no charges. He is suspected to have been committed another kidnapping slash rape of two teens in 1977, but cannot be directly tied to it.
Wait, so these two chicks that he sits there and does this attempted rape on, they're alive?
No, not attempted. They're alive, and he raped them. Yeah.
You've got two.
It was not attempted. He raped them.
You've got two living
and they testify.
Witnesses to rape.
And the prosecution is so shitty. Yeah.
Wow. You've got
apparently one of the.
I think the prosecution drank more than he did.
There's one story I read that one of the young ladies got scared and changed her story at the last minute. Looking in the guy's eyes, she's like, I was not raped, and I don't even want to look at him kind of situations.
They finally got him, 3 years later that one? Okay, and didn't he do some other shit in between?
Oh, yeah, he does a lot.
Okay, I'd be willing to change my story, too. Like, you know what? This dude is just fucked. He's crazy.
He was clearly a terrifying individual. He gets off of it. And like I said, 3 years later, there was another dual kidnapping and rape, and he's suspected of it, but they can't directly tie him to it.
I don't really get that. Like, you show up in court with this guy, and, like, you're like, I don't really understand that math. Like, if I talk nice about him, he's going to be out and leave me alone. Rather than, why don't I talk bad about him
and get him in the clink where he's not going to get me?
Why do you do that? I don't understand.
Well,
that.
But I also have never, I've never been raped, and so I don't understand the psychological shift.
Well, you don't hitchhike.
True. I do get to that.
There you go.
What happens if he gets out? You know, he's like, 4 or 5 years later, he gets out. Then he's really pissed off because, he's already done this shit.
Oh, we're going to find out what happens when he gets out in some time.
I don't really understand it because, you got two chicks hitchhiking, you pick them up, and you can't score? Like, I don't really understand that. Like, that's
you don't need to be violent about it. It's just you're already hitchhiking. You're in the middle of nowhere. It's like, do you really want to be out here?
It seems like you got plenty of time.
Ask Cash of Grass.
Yeah. I don't know. Wow.
So he gets off on this, and it is said that this is when he swore off booze and weed in an effort to turn his life around, so he sobered the fuck up. And he almost immediately found a young bride, Karen, who was 17 years old.
And he was how old?
In his 20s, early 30s.
Ah, 17's legit.
Creepy old is how old he was.
17's legit in plenty of places. I'm cool with it.
it was not cool.
Ow.
They did get married a few years later in 1984. They did have a daughter together. Both of them are in witness protection. I bring that up again later. As you would expect, the marriage didn't go well, and they divorced after only a few years because married a murderer or a potential murderer rapist. Story goes that she packed up and split on Valentine's night. Angry about the ending of the relationship, Ivan burned down her parents' home. This ended up in court, and his former wife warned them of his violent streak, but yet again he got off easy and was soon out terrorizing the countryside again.
Who doesn't want to do that to their in-laws?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I think if the man's burned down your home, you don't really need to give a warning about him. It's fairly self-evident at that point, but...
You would think, but when you're testifying in court, if you have an opportunity for a couple extra words, go, and he beat me, he's a problem. Put him away. But no, he burns down his ex-wife home because he's pissed off about it.
I broke up with him. Okay, you know what? Instead of going out and getting drunk and, having a one-night stand that's not violent, instead, he decides he's going to become an arsonist.
Yeah.
Sure, whatever.
He's not a psychopath. Put him out on the streets. It's fine. It was around this time that backpackers started disappearing from around the Belanglo Forest, which is a Facebook hint. And I didn't put the sign in because I knew it would be too dead a giveaway for the Australian listeners. But it's not too far from where Ivan was living and an easy place for him to be familiar with. It is important to remember for us in the U.S. that although we were being warned away from hitchhiking at this time, it was common in Australia and other places considered safer. So, we were told not to hitchhike by public television then, but late 80s, early 90s, not everybody was. It was pretty commonplace. And you travel to another country and backpack around. That's how you did it.
That's, crazy to me.
Yeah, because, they don't have people like Green River Killer or I-5 Killer over there. You know, they don't have serial killers.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, they don't have them.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
They don't have crazy people that stalk you with knives and kill you. No.
By the numbers, they have fewer of them, but they are definitely still around. And let me tell you, after this guy, hitchhiking got curtailed in Australia.
Yeah.
I'm going to guess so did camping without notifying anybody where you were.
Right. On January 25th, 1990, a British backpacker named Paul Onions. So, again, we made fun of the name already. He's a Facebook hint as well. He took a ride from a man near the area who called himself Bill. As the conversation turned south, Onions tried to run when they pulled over for a break. Malott, which we now know it was Malott, pulled his gun on Onions, but Onions took off into the woods, leaving his backpack in the car. Apparently, Malott fired at him. When he got back to the main road, having avoided Malott shooting at him, he flagged down a car and he made his way first to the police, then back the fuck to Britain. So, smart one, that guy. Good job, Paul.
I want to be half a world away, please.
Yeah, you fuck know. This.
12,000 miles. Yeah, that's about right for distance here.
And if you see it depicted in most of the movies and things, it's like one of the first things that comes out of Paul's mouth, and Paul's a testament to this. It's like, you're one of the first real rugged Australians I've ever met. Malott gives him that kind of knowing smile thing, and it just gets fucking creepy. I can imagine that's pretty close to real life.
Well, around here, well, in America, the trope would be, you start hearing dueling banjos in the background.
Yep.
Yep. I just can't imagine going on a plane and going to a foreign land and being like, let's go backpacking. I can't imagine doing that.
Oh, that's...
I know it's a very...
That's the way most people our age know Europe.
I know it's
yeah.
a very yeah. common thing, but nope.
It's not anymore.
Nope, I've seen Hostel.
It's not common anymore. I will agree. It's but just, it was common back then.
Oh, well, you know.
I mean, our parents, like I said, on PBS, they said, don't fucking take rides from hitchhikers. There were commercials about that kind of shit.
Stranger danger.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, don't get in anybody else's car. They start knocking that shit into you at four.
I mean, and I'll admit to have taken a couple of rides. I wasn't technically hitchhiking, but I've taken a couple of rides here and there, and I made it through, but.
Yeah. Wrecked on the side of the road. Getting a
most
ride
time,
to
most
a Denny's.
Most time it was broke down. Somebody was kind enough. There was this really, really nice gentleman who fucking saved my life in January and outside of, partway to Seattle in Washington. And it was just torrential sideways rain like it gets up there. And I'm walking the road and he pulled over and he just saved my fucking life. So thanks to that guy. But,
I've just always been like, I think I'd rather just, like, die here of exposure than, like, being...
Than get in your van.
Yeah, having some sort of vivisection thing going on. Like, you know.
Yeah.
I've just always hung out and just waited for a cop to show up.
Well, backpacking was super common. Yeah,
this is either the start of a really good porn or a really bad horror movie.
Well, we already had a dude run away by being shot at, so we're well into horror movie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Backpacking has always just struck me as just like, I think I'll drive my Ferrari through the South Bronx. Just like, you know, you should be able to do that, but...
I heard a story about somebody seeing a Lamborghini rear-end a Ferrari in L.A. and how just joyous it made them feel.
That would make me feel really
You
happy.
Would feel really good.
Yeah. Yeah,
driving by in your 30-year-old vehicle.
And the guy in the Pinto pulls up and says, hey, y'all need some help?
I know, right?
Nah, if I saw that, if I saw, like, those two cars just in a line at the light, I would go out and try and cause that accident. it's just like, come on. It's like the balls are lined up for the corner pocket. You have to do it.
Let's watch $250,000 disappear right now.
That is a 1-9 combo. that is definitely a 1-9.
It is. Won the game. So our next big Malott thing happens on September 20th, 1992, when a group of hikers in the area now called Executioner's Drop.
Jesus.
That was a sneeze, not a reaction, but it was very well timed. You need a second?
Oh, my God.
Yes. This thing has a pause button. You going to make it? So, yeah, a group of hikers in an area now called Executioner's Drop.
I feel like I just gave a blowjob. It's a lot of mucus.
In a place now called Executioner's Drop. Which is in the Belanglobe State Forest, walked up on what they thought was a kangaroo leg, only to discover it was actually the back of a human head. They reported this, of course, to the police, who went out and found a second body nearby the next day. The bodies were identified as British women Joanne Walters and Caroline Clark. Walters had been stabbed at least 9 times. Some stories or sources I read said over 20. And Clark was shot in the head around 10 times. Both had been brutalized, but the two had disappeared in April, and there was some decent amount of decay, so they couldn't do everything. General consensus was that Clark had been killed and then tied to a tree and used as target practice.
Wow, so one gets shot and one gets stabbed.
Both of them.
It's like putting the work
way
in
too many times.
Wow.
It is the definition of overkill. The psychological
there
definition
of overkill.
There is
some rage in here.
Yeah.
I don't know about that. You know, I wouldn't go that far. I think if you're stabbing somebody, I could see getting to 20 pretty easily.
Better have a strong hilt, from what I understand, because the knife gets slippery. And
yeah, you got stuff spraying.
From what I understand, you know, I've listened to and read and watched a lot of murder shit. But
I mean, to me, like, stabbed 20 times has never been, like, any sign to me of, like, oh, that's over the top. It's like, seriously, you stab somebody once?
Yeah, but shot in the head and then tied to a tree and used as target practice?
No, no, that's...
That's over the fucking line, Donnie. it's...
I don't know. Yeah, somebody, you know, proficient, like, Coley or something like that, they'll cut you. I mean, just... Autopilot will kick in. You'll get cut 15 times.
Not if you're stabbing
times.
Somebody, you're just in a rage and like, ar, 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 you know.
Right.
Well, look at every prison shanking you see.
Yeah.
They just take that ice pick and fucking go for broke.
Yeah.
I don't know. Most of the ones I see on TV are one shot up underneath the ribs and walk away so you don't get caught. We watch different prison movies, I guess.
Well, I think the thing...
Yeah, you watch them for the rape scenes.
Well,
I watch them for the
I think the
scenes.
Thing of it is
don't
like...
That's true.
The prison shank, the prison shank is a makeshift knife, so it's a different thing.
Yeah.
And if you've got some prep time.
Fair.
You know.
So. Fair. So, although police expected there were more bodies in the area, it was not until October...
You think?
It was not until October of 1993 when a man collecting firewood in the... Bellanglow Forest stumbled upon a human skull and thigh bone. When he led police to the location, they uncovered 2 full bodies that were identified as Deborah Everest and James Gibson, both Australians, who had gone missing in 1989. So again, right after the divorce house burning down thing. And they'd been out there longer than the last two they found.
If you're going to go camping, camp someplace that's somewhat...
Well, this
okay,
is
don't go backpacking into
I gotta
your
say,
spot.
Like you might want to look up the Bellanglo.
The Bellanglo.
Mm-hmm. It's beautiful. I can see why people go there. It is beautiful. Even the swampland is beautiful, although it is straight out of Crocodile fucking Dundee. But maybe that's just because I'm an American. But I can see why people camp there. And
yeah.
It's only like it's about as far away from Malott's house in the outskirts of Sydney. As our camp spot is from us. So it's similar kind of area.
An hour.
Yeah, hour-ish.
Man, I feel sorry for, like... I don't know. See, like, if I discover that kind of shit, like... I don't know. You know, maybe it's different in the moment. But, like, for me, it's like... Especially if it happened a while ago. So, like, the bones are all cleaned up by the various vermin and that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Man, if you get stabbed in like a national park and I come across your skull, I think I'm going to keep it.
Yeah, you may not be reported.
I think it's an art project at that point. You know?
It's funny you say that because one of his victim's skulls has not been found, and I don't think we're to that person yet. But
no, it's like
you know how illegal it is to have a human skull that's not antiquated, right? It's super illegal.
Yeah, well, I mean, I have a human vertebrae.
You do.
I probably shouldn't be allowed to have, so.
Yeah, you do.
I mean,
so,
now
everybody knows it.
I'm okay
no, I
with
think he
it.
Bought it on eBay with, like, legal
it's
and shit.
It's just, like, sort of.
I remember when he got it.
Well, it's a gift.
It was beautiful.
It was actually surprisingly salty.
That was pre-COVID that you figured that out. That was before we quit licking everything.
Well, I had to.
I think he still fucking licks things.
Well,
the microphone. Given
the opportunity,
every week.
I think we all do.
That microphone every week, that it gets a little.
Why
bit
do
low.
You think I mark the fucking microphones?
Well, I mean, you want to know, right?
It actually. Has I, to I do think the it's sound more mixing, like, but.
Actually, I think it's more like, you know, when you're in grade school and you're licking all your lunch so that nobody's going to ask you for your rolls.
Oh, it's very
Can I have your fruit
like
roll
that.
Up? So, this discovery did confuse police a little bit because a couple's belongings were discovered a couple years earlier, almost 75 miles north in a suburb of Sydney. Again, the bodies showed signs of extreme overkill. So, like, I won't go into all the details, but again, like, extreme overkill. November 1st, 1993, while searching the area, police, because they were still searching it, this is only a couple days later, police discovered another body. It was identified as Simone Schmidt, a German backpacker who had gone missing in 1991. Near the brutalized body, they found clothes that that were found later to belong to another missing hitchhiker named Anja Habeschied, also German. Anja's body was discovered
Anya.
On November...
Anya, yeah.
Anya.
I knew somebody with the name spelled that way who pronounced it Anja, so that's what I meant.
Anja Habeschied.
Okay.
Yeah,
cool.
No, it's.
I knew somebody with that name spelled that way, and they said Anja.
That's jazzing it up for the English audience.
Probably. She was from the LA area.
It's like brown brawn. It's like that.
Probably. Okay, fair. So Anya's body was discovered on November 3rd, so again, just a couple days later, 1993. She was decapitated. It's her whose skull has never been found.
So there's one there.
What?
There's a skull out there.
Yeah, we can go to the Ballingall.
Really?
Well, when they start letting Americans in, yeah.
I would love that ever so much. go get a skull and, you know.
So could just go camping with us. I am positive there are bodies where we go camping.
Well,
not that I put them there. It's remote enough.
It stands to reason. I've never gone camping anywhere or like hiking or camping. Not that I do a lot of that sort of thing. But like any time I've ever been camping or hiking, I always find a pair of panties and I always wonder if there's a skull nearby.
Do you even own a tent?
No.
Why would he own a tent?
Yeah, true.
No, I don't want any part of that.
You've got a van.
Well, you know what I'm talking about.
The van doesn't drive that far. It goes to the Steeler.
You go camping and like you always find these like weird panties. And you're just like,
I agree.
I wonder if there's a skull nearby. And you give a quick look and you're just like, shit, you know? No.
Whereas
no joy.
I go camping and mushrooming and all that shit. And like, I got really excited. Jonathan did too when we were out mushrooming. And
you found a skull?
No, we found a plastic panties. Bag that looked like it might have a body in it. Or at least portions of.
Oh, I'm sorry. That didn't pan out.
So, yeah.
It's just garbage.
We didn't. It was just garbage. Anya's body was discovered on November 3rd, 1993. She was decapitated. Her skull has never been found. She was in a shallow grave near that of her boyfriend, Gabor Neugenbauer.
Neugenbauer.
Sure.
Oh.
The police had confirmed not only...
That was a save there. You don't want to be known as Anya Neugenbauer. That's a bad name.
The police had confirmed that not only were they looking for a vicious serial killer at this point, but he was also not very creative in his burial methods.
Like Anya Warhead.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Onion, more head.
And I thought onions was
going to be Oh, yeah, onion didn't have a head.
Onions was going to be the good joke. So as they further investigated the area, the police were able to determine that all of the victims had spent considerable time tied up and being tortured by the killer, sometimes tied up more than once. So, like, tied up and moved and then tied up again. There were some campsites near each of the brutal locations, so like there was a fire pit built and shit, and signs of someone who was a chain smoker with a ton of 22 shells around each of the areas, like up to 100 empty shells. So he's just like sit there and shoot guns to terrorize the people he's got.
That's like so fucked up, man.
Yeah,
that's
it's pretty
really,
fucked up.
Wow.
And it's a 22, so you know you can.
Maybe take a
that
shot
That has
at
something
them.
To do with the Australian gun laws.
Take a shot at them, watch them suffer.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah,
that's exactly
really,
what
wow.
they expect was going on.
Wow.
Yeah, you can put a
Not
22.
Even kind of. That is exactly
yeah,
what they expect
that's
was going
really
on.
Just, you really.
And then when you do it, you overkill to the level he did. Like, whew, fucking devil, this guy. Not a smart devil either. On November 5th, 1993, A $500,000 Australian dollar reward was offered for information leading to the arrest and conviction of this killer.
What's 500,000? Is that?
It's
like,
close enough to American dollars.
Is that like 300,000 American?
No, it's close enough. It's close. I don't know. It's close enough that there's no reason to do the math.
It's close enough to begin to question why, like, all these other countries use the word dollars if they're not dollars.
It's all because of Britain. That's why we use dollars.
What?
It's Britain's fault.
Britain doesn't have dollars. They've got pounds. But, like, if you go to Hong Kong, a Hong Kong dollar is worth, like, 20 cents.
That's because they just make more of them.
All
the time.
Not like we
don't. Not like we don't. We just a little bit slower. Trickle effect, so that, you know, that's trickle-down economics. I just figured it the fuck out.
Infrastructure.
So.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
An Australian dollar is 75 cents.
This is the largest reward offered in
Australia. 75 real cents. So, one Australian dollar is 75 real cents.
So an Australian dollar.
And they just flipped a couple years ago. Like, it was worth a couple years ago, but an Australian dollar was worth more than ours.
So an Australian dollar is worth like three times a Hong Kong dollar, which is worth like, yeah, it's just, find another word, man.
So
call it like mops.
Dollar's not even a really great word, honestly.
No, it's not. It's like, I don't know why everybody's copying us.
That's kind of one of the things I really appreciate about cryptos, is at least cryptos are fucking creative.
Cryptos have like great names, like Sushi Ethereum. Swap.
Yeah.
Ethereum.
It's good
Bitcoin.
Shit.
Bitcoin.
Yeah, Doge.
There's no slackers there. You know, they're making up money, and they can come up, but that's where they put their emphasis on them. Like, let's have a good name.
Shit.
So, I'm going to come up with my own crypto. You know, it's going to be called like Led Zeppelin. Everybody's going to buy
an NFT,
it.
Dude. That's just an
everybody's going to buy it. It's going to be like Led Zeppelin.
That's the next thing. They're going to sell band names as NFTs.
Yeah.
Watch it.
Watch it. You watch it.
Although people are figuring
I'm
out
not
the
buying
scam
any,
behind
I'm
that.
Not buying any Eagles. I'm not buying any Eagles. I'll buy Led Zeppelins. Yeah, sure. I'll buy that.
So this
stay away from the Dire Straits.
Oh, yeah,
they're hit and miss.
Yeah,
they're hit and miss.
Yeah. Great technique, just
the execution didn't work out.
Oh no, you just can't get any girls with them.
It's Dire Straits.
Yeah.
It's in the name.
Yeah. Yes.
Well, your money ain't for nothing, and your chicks are free.
It's like if you're into Dire Straits, you don't
answer
get girls.
Is in the name.
If you're into Dire Straits, you don't get girls. But like if you start buying,
if you're into Kraftwerk, you don't get girls.
If you're buying Steely Dan's, girls run from you. They run. They're just like, no, they don't want anything to do with you. And the Coltranes? That's straight out.
You know how you get girls? Bowie.
Yeah, you
buy, anyway,
buy the Bowies. I got 10 Bowies. 10 Bowies is worth like one Fleetwood Mac. That's
So this $500,000 reward was the largest reward ever offered in Australia for information. Also on the table was the offer of a free pardon for anyone involved in the crimes but not directly tied to the murders.
Whoa!
Yeah,
I
so like
that.
If you're the driver of the van, we'll pardon you. We need to catch this.
I don't fucker. Think we've ever done that.
I don't think so. I don't
yeah,
think
we don't do that here.
I think it's against the law.
Yeah. Probably a bad
but like,
approach.
It was, it wasn't even like, give me your information as an informant and we'll ignore it. It was like straight up written, if you were involved in this shit and weren't directly involved in the murders, because there was suspicion that it was a group of people.
Yeah, we would have got Manson, like, way earlier.
Oh, shit, yeah.
If we had had that little policy in place.
Oh, shit, yeah.
Talk about hitchhiking mass murderer guy.
So that's kind of a cool convention. They received over 5,100 phone calls in the first 2 days. This culminated in over 1 million tips and 10,000 solid leads that the police actually followed. That's just the first couple of days.
10,000 solid leads. What is that in terms of, like, American solid leads?
75%. We already figured that out.
Yeah, it's like...
So, as the news of the now-dubbed Backpack Killer, which is how you will know him if you look him up on the internet.
What an ignominious name. That is horrible.
That's the way it should be.
Backpack Killer?
Serial killers should not get cool names. Serial killers should be like, he's the douchebag killer.
That's just like so...
And it would be less cool.
It's just so metric. You know, I mean, it's like we've got the Night Stalker.
BTK.
BTK. See, Night Stalker is a perfect example. Yeah. Don't give people cool
We've
fucking
got, like,
names.
Great names
Son of Sam.
Here. Son of Sam. Like,
don't do that. It glorifies the
Well, I mean, we're job, trying profession. To excel over here.
That you we know. Need to not sell. We need to make it, like I said, douchebag killer.
Then you've got, like, the off-board people where their name is good enough. Like, Ed Gein.
Mm-hmm.
Fucking great name for a serial killer. Yep. The Backpack Killer.
H.H. Holmes.
H.H. Holmes is just scary.
Bingo.
Like, your name is H.H.H., as in Happy Harry Hard-On? Seriously?
The Backpack Killer. It's
cultural joke.
Hey, what the fuck is that? The Backpack? That's like the...
Well, he mainly killed backpackers, and...
I know that, but
and
like,
some evidence of backpacks comes up eventually, too. So, I mean, it was...
But like, Backpack Killer is like the Used Shoe Killer. You know?
Good.
I mean, it's like... It's,
good.
It's just a bad name.
Some people tried to push Ivan the Terrible, but that one was already taken. But you will see him. Like, if you search Ivan the Terrible, you'll get some European history, and then you'll get and then you get this fucker.
Yeah, plus you get into this I Like Ike thing. That's not good.
So, as news of the now-dubbed Backpack Killer discoveries started getting international press, Paul Onions, living in Britain now, saw a news report that called the police investigating the murders. He described his encounter years earlier in great detail, including facts he had heard Bill reveal, like his Croatian family heritage, his notable handlebar mustache, not my handlebar, but the, you know, the down your face one.
The heavy and, metal.
And the white four-wheel drive that Matt
the Derek Malott's. Smalls mustache.
The Lemmy.
Derek Smalls mustache.
Yeah. And the white four-wheel drive that matched Malott's. He also gave a description and name of a lady who had driven him to town. She was contacted and backed the story up. Police got another important call when a man who had worked with Malott called in and suggested that they look into Malott due to some of the things he had heard and seen in Ivan's behavior on the job sites. So, you know, like lunchtime chat about brutalization of people and... suspicious.
Well, we all talk about our past dates.
Oof. Oh, God. Oof.
Wow. I'm sorry.
So soon Malott was the prime suspect. His previous charges, working on the road crew, so he traveled a lot, liked the outdoors, and proximity of his home to the belongings found were too much to ignore. When they looked into him, it got even worse. He had sold his Nissan Patrol, which... Damn it. I hate when people give him Nissan Patrol a bad name, but that's what he had. Just after the discovery of two of the bodies, and more acquaintances talked to the police, and the more guilty he sounded. The police then flew our hero, Mr. Paul Onions, to Australia to help them identify their suspect.
Well, Paul Onions had gone... the mile and made the initial long distance
international phone call
from Britain to Australia, which yep. like his little convo with the police must have cost him like a pretty penny.
$82.
Yeah.
I mean, it was like the early 90s, it was 94-ish.
Yeah, that was an expensive phone call.
That was
back then.
Yeah, very expensive phone call. He on May 5th, 1994, he positively identified a photo out of 14 of Malott as the man who had picked him up and threatened to kill him years earlier. He also guided them to the place where the attack occurred, and it was very close to where all the victims had been found. They figured they had their man.
Wait, how much later was this, do you know?
Well, the first disappearances started in like 89.
No. Paul Onions gets abducted, escapes back in... Then
he was
comes
escaped
back,
in 90.
And he comes back when?
In 94.
Wow, so 4 years later,
yes.
It's like, I don't know, it's pretty cool. He could
do
some
it.
Stuff. That's pretty amazing.
I mean, luckily, Ivan Milat was not one of those Ted Bundy guys who changed his look up very often. He kind of always just looked like Mr. Milat, you know?
Yeah.
Sorry, Mr.'s a little respectful for that fuckhead, but... police arrested him and his then-girlfriend, because somehow that guy can still get girls...
Yeah, that's one of those things that makes you think.
When this is what he looks like.
And that's what he always looked like.
Yeah, I'm a reasonably good-looking guy.
He's not terribly unattractive.
This is, I mean, maybe his Billy Jack look.
I can totally see it. Like, no, he's not. there you go.
Yeah.
That's
Madman in prison.
Yeah.
Yeah, right? So,
pretty sad, like, the closer he gets to how we look.
So, yeah, they arrest him, his then-girlfriend, at the home where Malat was still living with his mother.
Oh, Jesus.
And
what is with these guys? What is with this shit?
And he co-owned the house with his sister.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it was May 22nd,
now, these fuckers can own a house.
Yeah. May 22nd, 1994, when they arrested these fucking people.
That's kind of cool, at least. It lets you know that white trash isn't only an American phenomenon.
No.
That's kind of cool.
No.
I like that. Makes me feel better about myself.
The Aussies have a word for it, and I've totally blanked it.
I mean, white trash is the world.
There's a word for it in Australian. And
that's the one they don't copy. they're going on with dollars here and there, but they can't just say white trash. Why don't you just say it?
I normally know it. Anyhow.
Oh, she little English speakers.
Anyhow, so.
Oh, look at my fancy accent that sounds like it's from Brooklyn. Oh.
So, when the police entered home, they arrested Malat, who proceeded to taunt the officers as they searched. The first clues they came across were a postcard from New Zealand referring to Malat as Bill. He had escaped to New Zealand for a little while and used the name Bill during one of the earlier court case things.
Bogan,
thank you. That's the term. That's what Australians call white trash. Bogans.
They're bogans.
It's not quite as good.
I don't know. I think it's kind of cooler.
I don't think so. I think it's really... Sorry, Australia.
God, I'm disappointed in myself that word disappeared today. Of all the days for that word to disappear.
It doesn't make it for me.
So anyhow, the first clues they came across were a postcard from New Zealand referring to Malat as Bill. Matching 22 rounds. Matching tape from the crime scenes. And some money from Indonesia, where Malat had never been, but two of his victims had just before he killed them.
Well,
so you just got Indonesian money laying around, right?
Well, no. If you're an Australian person, you might have Indonesian money because, like,
right? Well, they go to Thailand a lot.
Yeah,
yeah, and back, yeah, and yeah. Vices and verses.
Yeah.
I mean, for those guys in Australia,
but Malat had never gone there.
Well, yeah. Evidently, picking up a hitchhiker was a really common thing. So it's like, hey, you know what? I picked this person up and they asked me if they're, you know what? I've never had any Indonesian money. Hey,
I'll
only give that as a souvenir of this ride.
Give me some of your Yang money.
I dropped him off in Sydney and here we go.
Rupert's really on the SS cancel today, isn't he?
Well, I mean, like,
you take turns on a weekly basis.
We do. It's not on purpose.
Going off to Indonesian for those guys is like, us going to Mexico or something.
Hawaii, yeah.
Hawaii.
Yeah, it's about as far as Hawaii, from my understanding.
It's a distant land.
And cheap, flights are cheap, and Thailand is really inexpensive, from what I understand.
Yeah, I mean, the difference is like, if you're an American and you go visit Hawaii, and you're an Australian, you go visit Indonesia, the difference is like, if you're an Australian, the people like you there. Where we go visit Hawaii, they don't like us too much.
Holy, they like our fucking money.
They like our money.
They like that tourism money, and then they want you to get the fuck out.
Yeah. Go away, Holly. Don't go see the normal stuff. Go to the beach, Holly.
Yeah.
Get off my break, Holly. Anyway, so soon the treasure chest opened, and the police started
trash.
And the police started finding backpacking gear from the victims, cameras, and all manner of other physical items linking Malat to the murders. Some of these items had been stored inside the walls of the house. Amongst the items were parts of a Ruger 22, which I mentioned in one of the intro quotes. Which had been identified. Yep, literally a Ruger 10-22, most popular 22 rifle on the planet.
Well, it's the best 22 rifle on the planet. For the money. For the money.
Yeah, definitely for the money. He did apparently use a couple other 22s as well. Apparently, he had, for Australia, a large cache of weapons, which might mean 9. By American standards, you know.
A small collection of firearms.
Yeah. Well, okay. Like, you may have had a few more guns than I do.
Yeah.
And in Australia, that's a lot.
To be fair, what we tend to think of as a lot, the average U.S. citizen probably thinks is too much.
Mm-hmm.
I mean.
That's fair.
I probably have too much by some normal American standard.
By a lot of American standards, a gun is a lot.
Yeah.
but they're learning. They're coming right across.
Yeah.
I don't know if you're across the Latino Rifle Association, but them fuckers are great. They're badass.
Yeah, I've noticed that, like, since I've been living in this country, that, like, when somebody says, like, so, Rupert, how many guns do you have? And I say, I don't really know. That's not what they want to hear.
They leave the conversation.
That's not what they want
to
hear.
They get out of the van, run into the woods, and go directly to the police and then back to Britain.
I've noticed that. I've noticed that.
Two safes and a need for a third. Yeah. Yeah. You count your guns by... Yeah, I count them by how many safes I need.
Right. So it did not pass the eyes of the investigators that many people along the way had suggested that Ivan had not acted alone. Some even mentioned that a woman may have been helping abduct some of these victims.
Ah, that's hot.
Well, there's, you know, there's a couple of those murderous
couples.
Gotta
keep it in the family.
Oh, dude, it gets sicker.
Yeah.
The police searched some of the homes, or searched the homes of many of the brothers and sisters. They found minimal evidence that that any of them were involved. While questioning acquaintances, many mentioned that they believed that Ivan and his sister, who he co-owned the house with, had been carrying a long-term physical relationship.
What was the sister's name?
I think it was I think it was Susan. I'm sorry.
Oh, wow.
I think it was.
Yeah, that's a... Yeah.
You know...
Yeah, that's a...
I didn't write it down, and I don't remember the reason that I didn't write it down, but that is what my memory takes me to, and... So anyway, she also...
Shirley,
okay.
Shirley, oh, safe.
Shirley, I'm safe now.
Safe, yeah, that was a safe.
So, yeah, anyhow, so apparently he maybe, and again, unconfirmed, had a long-term physical relationship with his sister.
Good for him. Keep it in the family.
She also matched the description of the, quote, woman who may have been involved, but no evidence was found that could stick. Again, or to prove her into that point. At this point, only one of his siblings, Boris, who was the guy I mentioned earlier, has spoken out about his belief that Ivan did all of this. The rest of the family has done what they did in their childhood when the police called on their father, or were called on their father.
How do you get all these, like, siblings who are like, hey, looks like it's a boy. Let's name him, like, Ivan. Hey, looks like a boy again.
They're Croatian.
Let's name him Boris.
Dad was Croatian.
And then it's like,
Does it make sense now?
It's a girl.
Shirley.
Ah, Susan Shirley.
Mom was Australian.
Shirley. There was,
There was Shirley, Mary, and Olga.
Ah.
They snuck an Olga in there.
I'm surprised he didn't have a relationship with Olga.
So,
nobody ever wants a relationship with an Olga.
Oh, I don't know. I had a friend who had a relationship with an Olga, and she was...
She had a relationship with him.
She was a very dirty girl.
Like I said, she had a relationship with him.
Oh, my God. She was a beautiful, dirty little girl. Oh, my God.
Do you need a moment?
No.
He's got a little gleam in his eye.
Man, that was like the best relationship ever. That was good.
And you weren't even one in it that we know of. Hold on, never mind.
Most of the relationship you're not in are the best ones ever.
Right?
Just saying.
If you don't have
nothing
to carry
against
that weight.
Relationships. I love being in love and all, but seriously.
If you're not carrying that weight, don't do it.
Boris is the only of the surviving 12 or 13 siblings that spoke out against Ivan. The rest of the family did exactly what they'd done in their childhood when the police were called on their father. They deny everything and shut the fuck up.
I know nothing.
Yep.
Well, if old boy had just...
It is straight up mafioso.
Right, but if old boy is capable of massacring this number of people...
Well...
That means that you also knew what he was like a little bit of growing up, and he's going to be a little crazy, so no, don't speak out against
it
him.
It also pushes the suspicion that maybe some of them had their hands in it, too.
Well, you know.
And that is a huge, huge thing that people think. And when you look in the true crime community, that is something a lot of them address is that, like, all these kids were rabble rousers.
Yeah.
Rabble rousers.
Rabble.
And the possibility of them getting into this with Ivan later in life
is there.
It's kind of undeniable.
Come on. You know, they're Croatian. Let's have some cultural sensitivity here.
So, The day after his arrest, Malott was brought up on charges pertaining to onions, kidnapping, assault, etc.
He kidnapped some onions.
Yep. He denied all of them. It didn't take long for the investigation to confirm that the 22 pieces they had found matched those used in the murders.
22 body pieces. Wow.
Well, you know how the hammer strikes a thing, and they found a fucking barrel and a boot and a lower receiver and a fucking wall, and they stuck them together, and the paint matched, and then the rifling matched, and then the fucking...
Well,
you know,
the
it's ballistics, man.
Yeah, but usually those are too... They're too fucked up on a 22 to be able to match them effectively. However, the striking...
The striking on a Ruger is unique.
On, well, with the ejection... Oh, the ejector...
Oh, this sounds like the weeds. Reason.
Yeah.
This is time for Mache to get through the weeds. It didn't take long for the investigation to confirm the 22 pieces found matched the murders, nor for them to start confirming DNA evidence found on many of the other items. They even found photographs of Malott with clothing and sleeping bags that clearly belonged to the victims. Some of these are creepy. Like, there's a picture where he is clearly moving one of the ladies that he killed sleeping bag. It is so fucking creepy. They did eventually uncover items from the killings at many of the sibling homes, including clothing, another 22, a backpack, and others. Most of the time, the siblings said they were gifts or something he just asked to store there. So, again, endorsing the fact that maybe some of the family was involved. But
when your crazy older brother says, hey, store this, I need this stored.
Yeah, kind of do. So, ultimately, the family connection has not been proven, but it is pretty common suspicion that at least some of them were in on it. Again, only one of them has ever spoken out against him. So, either that guy's protecting himself because he was involved, or he's protecting himself because he wasn't. Whatever.
Well, you got to admire that a little bit. You know, stand by your blood.
Mm-hmm. Kind of. Right up until there's a horse head in the pillow. A jury was built from over 1,000 candidates, and Ivan went on trial before Justice Hunt. Great name. In October of 1994, the trial and subsequent follow-up trials continued for years, as is often the case in murder trials. During this time, the jurors were carted to the places where the bodies had been found, which actually closed the state forest land for a few days. Like, they just shut the fucking state forest land down. We're bringing some jurors in. His former wife, Karen, she, as I mentioned, is now in witness protection, testified about numerous trips to the Belanglo Forest region during their time together, as well as his occasional use of the name Bill. Onions did take the stand, and Ivan eventually ended up on the stand as well, where he pretty much denied everything. Mm-hmm. Hint quote again. So you asked the jury to accept that someone broke into your locked house despite the burglar alarm, planted a Ruger rifle bolt in the ceiling of your garage, dropped the weapons receiver in one of your boots in the hall cupboard, making sure both gun parts were painted in the same camouflage colors you use on your firearms, then left a single fired cartridge linked to the murder of Mrs. Caroline Clark in a plastic bag on the bed in a spare room, to which Malott said they must have. Fucking innocent, I guess, because he says so. On Saturday, July 27th, 1996, the jury pronounced Malott guilty of all charges. He received 7 consecutive life sentences, which is, for Australia, really fucking heavy.
Yeah,
like, we do that every other day here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But there...
Yeah, we get a hanging judge.
Yeah.
A life sentence over there is, you know, what, 20 years?
Unbelievable. So, yeah, 7 consecutive life sentences.
Here you get, like, 7 consecutive life sentences. You might do a solid 30.
Well, this is not getting out.
Yeah.
So it was 1 for each confirmed murder. He also got extra time for the crimes against onions. So, like, another 8 or 10 years. Like, his possibility of getting out of jail is not there.
Just in case, you know.
He's not getting out. As would be expected, Malott was not a model inmate. He has appealed many times. He was attacked during his first week in prison. He has a violent history while being incarcerated. He has swallowed razor blades and in a suspected suicide attempt. and he actually severed his own pinky finger with a plastic knife in an attempt to have his circumstances changed by mailing the finger to the Australian courts.
My favorite one?
I don't know what part is the worst about that.
How does that lower your sentence?
That's one of the things I think is worse.
How does that work?
Sending it away? A plastic knife taking off your pinky finger? That's another one that I question maybe
one that's
of the worst
That's another
that?
Weird one. Their plastic knives are obviously too substantial in Australian prison.
Clearly
well
built.
That. Yeah. But second of all, the fact that you can mail a finger out of prison.
He did not succeed.
They intercepted it before.
They
it
intercepted
the
finger, but why you
so
think that's going to get you
somebody's
off?
Somebody's on the job there.
I don't. I'm going to send my finger.
This is
some fucked up Van Gogh shit, yo.
Let's face it. Like, how many guys on Tinder send cock pics? You know, it's sort of the same thing there. You know, I can see it. I can see it.
How does it get you out of prison?
I'm trying to be very circumspect. You know, I'm trying to, you know, I'm trying to bring the woke. You know?
All right, well,
maybe he's just misunderstood.
In May of 2019, he lost 20 kilos following a hunger strike when his request for a PlayStation was denied.
That comes after some other controversy. Yeah.
I can get that because, like, QAnon Shaman, demanded organic food and he got it.
Yeah.
You know, so I can see it, you know. You just pull some crazy ass
There is
shit.
No inmate on my watch who would ever get anything close to a PlayStation, particularly America's worst serial killers. I knew he'd start eating again because he likes the food too much. So he can stage as many protests as he likes, but there'd be no point, even if he got one, because he'd need two hands to play it.
So there was also some controversy that sprung up when the public found out that he had a TV in his solitary cell, and that privilege was revoked because the public got fucking angry about it. years later he asked for a PlayStation.
That's ridiculous. That's just so
He weird. Has also attempted to escape a few times. One of these ended in his escape buddy being found hanged in his cell a few days after capture. Nobody knows who did it. this is not a dude you hang out with, man. You just don't. As of 2019, he was diagnosed with cancer and was undergoing treatment while still in the Aussie Supermax until he died on October 27th of 2019, one of the only great things that happened in 2019. In a letter he wrote days prior to his death, he requested that the New South Wales government pay for his funeral and burial because he felt that he was wrongly convicted.
Well, they do if you're in prison.
This was denied, and his cremation was paid by his prison account.
Well, you know, I mean,
because fuck you, Ivan.
That's a little bit of a neither here nor there. Like, you know, I mean, I don't know. I have a big problem with a lot of the prison treatment. Like, you know, I don't know. Maybe it might.
Well,
be
that's because we have
up.
Model prisons here. They're really wonderful.
It might be part of my wrap up to save it for that.
Okay. So my wrap up is this is just another case of clearly a fucked up individual. And this is one of the unique ones where I can't see my way clear to figure out, to give them a little space and understand a little bit. Most of the serial killers we cover, I can kind of find maybe why things were the way they were. And this guy, I just can't. I think he was just a fucking bad seed. And he proved it. He was a fucking bad seed. He has been they suspect him of zillions of other murders, but these are the only ones they could get him on, and I'm kind of glad fucker died in prison where he belonged. I have no love for this person.
I'm just glad they grow up on continents that aren't ours.
Occasionally, yeah.
Because this guy, he followed all of the same check marks that all the ones we cover in the U.S. do. Beat during childhood. Fucked up childhood, fucked up social skills, fucked up this, you know, fucked up family, no nothing. And then quit caring. The only thing he cared about was going out and doing what he wanted, which was evidently killing and raping and torturing and murdering and
That kind of thing. So, yeah. Good on you for dying where you were supposed to, which was in prison and away from everybody else, where the only person you were able to hurt was yourself by swallowing razor blades. Good on you, buddy. Way to die.
Okay, so, like, this is one of those things that tries men's patience, and, you know, it's one of those things where it's like, you've got this person who's clearly horrible, and it's like, man, dude, you can't approve of the death penalty here, and it's like, no, I really can't. It's like, you know, if you're either down with the death penalty or not. And
don't have it there.
And so if you're not down with the death penalty, that's sort of a little bit of a tacit admission that, like, A, we don't have – it is not upon the rights of man to decide who lives and who dies. You're saying that. And you are also saying that you can't torture somebody. Both of those things are very logical, or, you know, they're reasonable propositions. And so to me, if you say this person is going to be segregated from society for the duration of their life, i.e. you've given up on the death penalty, to me, I think it gets ridiculous when you start saying things like, well, they can't have TV. They just have to sit in their cell and stare at the wall, because now you're getting into torture. And so I think that you have, like, given up the high ground there once you've gone to that place. You're saying, I don't want to torture this guy enough to kill him, but I do want to torture him by making him stare at a naked light bulb for the rest of his life. And I think that's a little bit ridiculous. You know, if you're at the proposition, which is what I'm at, where it's like, I don't want this guy ever getting out of prison, I call it good there. That means he doesn't get tortured, which means he gets things, the basics. He gets all the books he wants. He gets all the TV he wants. No extended cable, basic cable. Okay? And no hideous meals. None of this shit, like, we feed him an apple with worms in it and all that kind. Once you're there, you know, if you want to get into torture, I'm your guy. But I can give that up and just say, like, we're not going to torture this guy. We're just going to excise him from society, and he is going to be removed from society and never get back into it. And that means, like, you want this, actually. You don't, the last thing you want is somebody who's got nothing left to lose and you're torturing him. Because what does that person visit upon the rest of the prison community? Nothing but killing other people and raping other people in prison. And it's ridiculous. You can't do that. You can't do that. You can't have some guy sitting in prison who has no hope of getting out, and then you torture him so he's got nothing left to lose and he starts raping other prisoners. Because then you've got some guy sitting there who's doing 10 years for something, I don't know, bank robbery or something. He's doing 10 years and he gets, like, ass raped every single day of the week. And then he gets out. What the fuck is he going to do? You know. So you have to treat these people humanely. And that means giving them books and TV, and it doesn't sound good, but that's the bargain you make when you say we're going to excise these people from society.
This sounds like something that friends do.
Well, I thought we were friends.
I'm extremely uncomfortable with that.
I know. But do you know